Okay, I'm going to begin by asking you a question. Have you ever dealt with extreme anxiety and fear? I'm assuming that we all have at one point in our lifetime. Fear can be good, but it can also be very debilitating. Here's a definition of fear from the Oxford Languages. It's an unpleasant emotion caused by a belief that someone or something is dangerous, likely to cause pain or threat. There can also be the fear of the unknown when we worry about what the day might bring, what tomorrow might bring, or what the future might bring. What are some of the physical symptoms of fear? Because there are. Maybe some of you experienced some of these physical manifestations of fear. What happens is that stress hormones like cortisol and adrenaline are released. Your blood pressure and heart rate increase. You've probably experienced that when you're under anxiety or fearful. You start breathing faster. This is something I did not know when I looked this up. Even your blood flow changes. So your blood actually flows from your heart into your extremities instead of the opposite. And the reason that happens is because your body is telling you that your body needs your blood to go to your extremities in case you're going to get in a fight or you're going to run. That's what happens. So that explains that fight or flight syndrome. So it's your mind and your body's way of trying to protect you. This is how God designed us. Like I said, fear can be good. It can be a good thing. But typically, it keeps us from doing something that's going to be harmful to ourselves. Now, notice I said typically. Typically. So what are some common fears? These are in no particular order. I just looked these up, common fears that people have. So there's fear of enclosed spaces. There's names for all these. That's claustrophobia. You've heard that. Fear of open spaces. I have no idea what that's called. Fear of open spaces. Fear of flying. Fear of heights. Fear of social situations. Fear of public speaking. Now, someone said that fear of public speaking is either number two or number one. Even a greater fear than death, I don't know, for some. I'd rather die than be a public speaker. Fear of animals, fear of birds, fear of snakes, fear of spiders, fear of clowns. No, I've seen young children scream when they've seen clowns. Fear of blood. That's interesting. There used to be a series on television called Doc Martin. I don't know how many of you have ever watched Doc Martin. So he's this famous, renowned surgeon, and he develops a phobia of blood. So imagine that. So every time he's involved in the surgery or whatever, and he sees blood, he either throws up or faints. So they send him off to some island or something like that to kind of deal with that, to get over that. But unfortunately, fear can lead to phobias, like Doc Martin experienced. So here's the difference between fear and phobia. So fears are common reactions to events or objects. But the fear becomes a phobia when it interferes with your ability to function and maintain a consistent quality of life. And this does happen to people. So if you start taking extreme measures to avoid water, spiders, or people, you may have a phobia. It can become a mental health issue. Now, one of my sisters has a phobia of driving on the freeway. And what happened was she was headed home. She lived in Kalama at the time, a little north of Vancouver. And it was raining real hard. Water was building up on the freeway, and she hit a very large body of water, and she began to hydroplane. and her car did about three 360s, crossed from the right lane over into the left lane and went up against the barrier, the medium. So she sat there frozen in fear. And from that day forward, that's been a long time ago, she could no longer drive on the freeway. No longer drive on the freeway. Now she lives up in Mount Vernon, which is about an hour north of Seattle. And if she wants to come to Vancouver where her daughters and grandchildren are, she either takes the train or her husband will bring her down, or one of her granddaughters goes up and picks her up, brings her down, takes her back. But she can't drive on the freeway. So there can be frightening situations we experience that can create a fear of phobia that if you experience that, you think it's going to happen again. You think, oh no, that situation, what I dealt with, it's going to happen again. And when that happens, then all of those stress hormones that I mentioned kick into gear. And basically, you just kind of shut down. You can't do it. You run, you leave, get away, whatever. Maybe some of you have experienced panic attacks. Now, panic attacks can be very sudden and intense, but they also have physical symptoms if you've ever experienced them, which include shaking. People can shake real bad. You can feel disoriented, nausea, rapid irregular heartbeats, dry mouth, breathlessness, sweating, and dizziness. I saw someone have a panic attack in a meeting one time, and they just froze up. It was like their brain just locked up, and they just sat there. They couldn't do anything. Typically, the symptoms of a panic attack are dangerous, but can be very frightening. I guess they could be dangerous if you thought about the fact if you were driving a vehicle or operating machinery or doing something like that and you had a severe panic attack. I guess it could. Now, I'm going to assume that we have found a way to deal with our fears, whatever they might be. We've learned how to deal with them in our own way. I was speaking with a church member just recently about public speaking. We were talking about public speaking and doing presentations, because they were asked to and required to do some presentations. And this individual doesn't enjoy them at all, and they gave me the reasons why they don't. And I understood that. I could relate to that. Because I shared with this individual what it was like for me when I first started speaking in front of a group. And honestly, I was a mess, a nervous wreck. But I wanted to overcome that fear and anxiety. So how did I do it? Well, at that time, it took a lot of prayer, it took time, took encouragement for others and forcing myself to do it. I can recall Mr. Duncan's here. I don't know if he remembers this story, but I can recall years ago when, just a young lad, he invited me to go to Spokesman Club as his guest. And during the meeting, he asked if I would, he introduced me, and he asked if I would stand up and introduce myself and give the men a little background about myself. And so I did, and shaking like a leaf, you know, up there. And I don't know, I think I stood up there for about 2 minutes, gave my name and maybe where I lived or something like that. So I sat down, and Mr. Duncan said, "Nah, that's not good enough. Get back up. Get back up. There's more about you and your life than you've told," because Mr. Duncan, he knew me somewhat. He had been counseling with me, and he knew my dad. Anyway, so I got back up, and I can't remember how long I spoke after I got back up. But Spokesman's Club really helped. Graduate Club after that helped. Product presentations that I was required to do for my customers, that helped. And then eventually sermonettes helped. But I immersed myself in doing what I feared doing, and gradually it got easier and the fear diminished. Not to say that I still didn't on occasion get butterflies and get a little nervous. I think a lot of speakers still do that. I talked to a man who had been speaking for, I think he told me, 40 plus years, and still on occasion he would get butterflies, and actually on occasion he'd have to go in the bathroom, get himself calmed down so he could go on and speak. Now, I don't know if I could convince my sister to get in a car with me and go out on the freeway and try to overcome her phobia and start driving. If she had a panic attack, she might not be able to do so. She might have to seek professional counseling to deal with it. Might be a solution, or even take medication designed to help control what the brain and heart do when under extreme fear and anxiety. That's a solution for a lot of people. Some people have to do that to deal with their anxieties. Now, on the flip side of the coin, some people seem to be fearless, or they've learned to control that fear. We often refer to those people as what? What's the word that pops in your head? These type of people that are fearless. Daredevils? You've heard that word used. He's a daredevil, or she's a daredevil. You know, I want to know what this term meant, where it came from, term daredevil. So I Googled it. Hey, Google, what does daredevil mean? Well, the term was penned somewhere around 1794. And the article didn't say who was tagged with the term. So I did a little research. What happened in 1794? A lot of things happened. There was the Whiskey Revolt, which might have caused somebody to be tagged with the term. I don't know. A whiskey runner. It didn't say who was tagged with the term. It just said it was pinned around that time. But it means a recklessly daring person, one who fears nothing and will attempt anything. Any of you have children that way? Uh-huh. My oldest son was that way. But it comes from dare, which is a verb, and devil, which is a noun. And the definition says the devil might refer to the person, or the sense might be one who dares the devil. The meaning might imply that if you kill yourself, you now belong to the devil. I thought that was quite an explanation of that word. Now, you've probably heard stories of individuals who have pushed aside their fear to help or rescue someone. Recently, there was a news story, I don't know if you saw it, but there was a policeman who didn't know how to swim. And he jumped in this very deep water retention pond because there was a young child in there drowning. So I think it happened locally, but he jumped in and rescued this drowning infant, he and someone else that kind of helped him. But he pushed aside that fear that he had. Didn't know how to swim, possibly could drown, and some have. I read another story of someone who couldn't swim, jumped in, saved the young person, but they themselves drowned. Now, there's different types of fear. I mentioned the effects of fear on our mind and bodies. Like I said, fear can be good or bad. And there's different meanings given to the word fear, and we'll look at another meaning later. But what I'd like to discuss with you this afternoon is fear in the context of our everyday lives, or in the context of our Christian walk, and how fear and anxiety might have an impact on each of us. What do we need to develop in our lives that will give us the ability and power to cope with our anxieties and fears? Maybe not perfectly, but possibly better than we currently are. You know, we read examples of individuals in the Bible who rejected or overcame fear and displayed tremendous courage in times of adversity or when courage was needed. Let's take a look at three of these examples of individuals who did so. And as we read these stories, try to glean from the story what gave them the ability to do so. Because these individuals were no different than you and I. If you read other accounts of these individuals, you'll see there were times when they did fear, when they struggled with fear. But yet, it was reasons they were able to push aside that fear, and do what they did. So the first story let's look at would be King David. Let's go to 1 Samuel chapter 17, if you would. We all know this story very well. This is the story of David and this giant Philistine named Goliath. He's going to face this giant. So I'm going to break into the story here, 1 Samuel chapter 17. I'm going to begin in verse 14. It says David was the youngest, so he was the youngest of his brothers, and the three oldest followed Saul, so his three older brothers. But David occasionally went and returned from Saul to feed his father's sheep at Bethlehem. And the Philistine, this is talking about Goliath now, grew near and presented himself 40 days, morning and evening. Then Jesse said to his son David, "Take now for your brothers an ephah of this dried grain and these 10 loaves, and run to your brothers at the camp, and carry these 10 cheeses to the captain of their 1,000, and see how your brothers fare, and bring back news of them." Now Saul and they and all the men of Israel were in the valley of Elah, fighting with the Philistines. So David rose early in the morning, left the sheep with the keeper, took the things and went as Jesse had commanded him. And he went to the camp as the army was going out to battle and shouting for the battle. For Israel and the Philistines had drawn up in battle array, army against army. And David left his supplies in the hand of the supply keeper, ran to the army, and came and he greeted his brothers. Then as he talked with them, there was the champion, the Philistine of Gath, Goliath by name, coming up from the armies of the Philistines, and he spoke according to the same words. So David heard them. And all the men of Israel, when they saw the man, fled from him and were dreadfully afraid. Notice, they were all in fear. So the men of Israel said, "Have you seen this man who has come up? Surely he has come up to defy Israel. And it shall be that that man who kills him, the king will enrich him with great riches, and give him his daughter, and give his father's house exemption from taxes in Israel." Then David spoke to the men who stood by him, saying, "What shall be done for this man who kills a Philistine and takes away the reproach from Israel? For who is this uncircumcised Philistine that he should defy the armies of the living God?" So we just get a little hint here of David's attitude, his frame of mind. And the people answered him, manner saying, "So it shall be done for this man who kills him." Now Eliab, his oldest brother, heard when he spoke to the men, and Eliab's anger was aroused against David and said, "Why do you come down here? And with whom have you left these few sheep in the wilderness? I know your pride and insolence of your heart, for you've come down to see the battle." And David said, "What have I done now? Is there not a cause?" It's like the youngest brother, right? What have you done now? Or what have I done now to make you guys mad? So then he turned from him toward another and said the same thing, and these people answered him the first ones did. Now when the words which David spoke were heard, they reported them to Saul, and he sent for him. And David said to Saul, "Let no man's heart fail because of him. Your servant will go and fight with this Philistine. And Saul said to David, you're not able to go against this Philistine to fight with him, for you're a youth, and he's a man of war from his youth. But David said to Saul, he said, your servant used to keep his father's sheep. And when a lion or bear came and took a lamb out of its flock, I went out after it, struck it, and delivered a lamb from its mouth. And when it rose against me, I caught it by its beard and struck and killed it. Your servant has killed both lion and bear, and this uncircumcised Philistine will be like one of them, seeing that he's defiled the armies of the living God. Moreover, David said, the Lord who delivered me from the paw of the lion and from the paw of the bear, he will deliver me from the hand of this Philistine. And Saul said to David, go and the Lord be with you. So we see here the things that David had accomplished, the things that he had faced as a youth, and he knew where his strength come. And we see how he was able to push aside his fear. We see that Saul and his army were afraid of this giant. We know the rest of the story. Let's drop down to 45 here. Verse 45. Then David said to the Philistine, you come to me with a sword, with a spear, and with a javelin, but I come to you in the name of the Lord of hosts, the God of armies of Israel, whom you've defied. This day the Lord will deliver you into my hand, and I will strike you and take your head from you. This day I will give the carcasses of the camp of the Philistine to the birds of the air, and the wild beasts of the earth, and all in the earth may know that there is a God in Israel. Then all this assembly shall know that the Lord does not serve with sword and spear, but the battle is the Lord's, and he will give you into our hands. So you could see the confidence that this young man had, knowing that he could rely on God, even at this time, to fight this giant. Confident that God would give this giant into the hands of Israel, which God did. Now think about Saul, who was afraid, who should have, as the king of Israel, faith and confidence in what God would do, should have gone out against this giant, but he didn't. Do you think there were times when Saul regretted that he did not do so? That he did not have the faith and confidence that he should have as king of Israel? I'm sure there were times when he woke up from a sleep thinking about what David had done. One of the reasons that Saul came to hate David, because of who David was. All right, let's look at a couple more examples. Let's go over to Daniel chapter 3. Daniel chapter 3, I'm going to begin in verse 16. Most of you are familiar with this story. The story begins by King Nebuchadnezzar setting up this huge golden statue and commanded that everyone had to bow down to it. But these three young Jewish boys refused. Now they knew what could happen if they refused to do so. So let's read here, Daniel 3, verse 16. Shadrach, Meshach, and Abednego answered and said to the king, O Nebuchadnezzar, we have no need to answer you in this matter. If that's the case, our God, whom we serve, is able to deliver us from the burning fiery furnace, and he will deliver us from your hand, O king. But if not, if God doesn't do it, let it be known to you, O king, that we do not serve your gods, nor will we worship the gold image which you have set up. Then Nebuchadnezzar was full of fury, and the expression on his face changed toward Shadrach, Meshach, and Abednego. He spoke and commanded to heat the furnace seven times more than it was usually heated. And he commanded certain mighty men of valor who were in his army to bind Shadrach, Meshach, and Abednego and cast them into the burning fiery furnace. So you know the rest of the story. You know that God protected them, sent an angel to protect them in that furnace, and they survived. Their clothes weren't even singed. But were they afraid? Well, it doesn't say. I would imagine there was probably some fear there, knowing that you're going to be thrown into the furnace. But they cast it aside because the relationship what they had with their God. All right, now let's jump over to Daniel chapter 6, because we can't leave Daniel out of the equation. Let's go to chapter 6. I'm going to begin in verse 7. Daniel's not going to be cast into a burning furnace. Instead, Daniel is going to be cast into a den of lions. Daniel 6, verse 7. And all the governors of the kingdom, the administrators, the satraps, the counselors, the advisors, have consulted together to establish a royal statute and to make a firm decree that whoever petitions any god or man for 30 days, except you, O king, shall be cast into the den of lions. Now, O king, establish the decree and sign the writing so that it cannot be changed according to the law of the Medes and Persians, which does not alter. Therefore, King Darius signed the written decree. Now, when Daniel knew, now notice what Daniel does here. When Daniel knew that the writing was signed, he went home. And in his upper room, with his windows open towards Jerusalem, he knelt down on his knees three times that day and prayed and gave thanks before his God, as was his custom since early days. Then these men assembled and found Daniel praying and making supplication before his God. And so, once again, you know the story, what happened. These men report to King Darius. They tell him what Daniel was doing, bowing down to his God. And Darius, because he had signed this written decree, he had no choice but throw Daniel into this den of lions. And once again, God reveals himself to Nebuchadnezzar and all peoples how great he was and how much he loved Daniel by restraining these lions from harming him. Now, Daniel could have gone to his room. He could have closed the windows, drawn the curtains, and they would have never known the difference. But he didn't, did he? He wasn't afraid. He wasn't afraid of what might happen. He trusted God. I think Daniel truly believed that God would protect him and carry him through this situation. And if not, then like the other three boys said, and that would, if that was God's will, then still it would demonstrate that there was only one true God. Those are so many stories that we could reference in regards to courage and casting aside our fears. Let's look at one more. I want to look at one more because I don't want to leave the ladies out, because demonstration of courage was not only applicable to the men, but there were women who displayed the same thing. Let's go to Esther chapter 4. Esther chapter 4. Let's look at the courage of this young Jewish girl. Esther chapter 4, I'm going to begin in verse 7, breaking into the story. And Mordecai told him all that had happened and the sum of money that Haman had promised to pay into the king's treasuries to destroy the Jews. So that was Haman's plan. He wanted all the Jews to be destroyed. He also gave him a copy of the written decree for their destruction, which was given at Shushan, that he might show it to Esther and explain it to her, that he might command her to go to the king to make supplication to him and plead before him for the people. And Hathach returned and told Esther the words of Mordecai. Then Esther spoke to Hathach and gave him a command for Mordecai. And all the king's servants and the people of the king's provinces know that any man or woman who goes into the inner court to the king, who has not been called, he has but one law: put all to death, except the one whom the king holds out the golden scepter, that he may live. Yet I myself have not been called to go into the king these 30 days. So they told Mordecai Esther's words. And Mordecai told them to answer Esther, "Do not think in your heart that you will escape in the king's palace any more than all the other Jews. For if you remain completely silent at this time, relief and deliverance will arise for the Jews from another place, but you and your father's house will perish. Yet who knows whether you have come to the kingdom for such a time as this?" Then Esther told them to reply to Mordecai, "Go and gather all the Jews who are present in Shushan and fast for me. Neither eat or drink for 3 days, night or day." So she said, "We need to beseech God the situation. My maids and I will fast likewise. And so I will go to the king, which is against the law. And once again, if I perish, I perish. If I perish, I perish." The same words basically of those three Jewish boys. So if you continue on the story, even though Esther feared that she would be killed, she went to the king. She presented herself to the king, even though she hadn't been called to see him. He held out the golden scepter. He accepted her. The king heard her, and because of her willingness to do so, she saved her people from genocide. A brave young lady. So, brethren, once again, how do we cope with fear, anxieties, and fear? Some of the fears, like I said, that we have, we deal with and we move on, or we just live with them. Other fears I mentioned can be quite debilitating. But how about the fear of the unknown or what the future holds? There are a lot of fears. There's fear for your health, fear for the security of your job, your security, or fear of the well-being of your children, grandchildren, what the future holds for them. These are all legitimate concerns. How well we deal with these fears can be determined by a number of factors. Let's take a look at three. The first factor is this: dealing with our fears and anxieties, being able to push those aside, depends on our relationship with God. We mentioned that in the lives of these individuals that we talked about, the stories we read. Like I said, these individuals were not really much different than you and I, or you and me. But we see all of them had a very strong and close relationship with God. They walked with God, they talked with God, spent time with God. And they had a very deep love and respect for God. They feared God. They feared God in different ways. They feared the power of God, what God could do. But not only that, they respected his great power and majesty, and they had a great reverence for God. And they depended on God. They had a strong dependence on God. And because of their relationship with God and everything they witnessed God do, especially in their personal life, they had an unbending faith in God and in God's promises. And that leads me into my second factor. So my first one was our relationship with God. And the second one in dealing with fears, anxieties, and that is our faith. You know, brethren, faith is not something that we just conjure up at the last moment when facing a fear. There's a lot to be said about fear. We've heard messages regarding our faith. Faith is used 240 times just in the New Testament. So it's an important factor in our lives. Jesus talked about faith a lot. Let's go to Matthew chapter 6, if you would. I'm going to begin in verse 25. So God gives us faith, and our faith should constantly increase. And it does, and there's a way it does. But I want you to notice what Jesus said here in Matthew chapter 6, beginning in verse 25. Because he's going to talk about things here that we all deal with at one time in our life, have dealt with, might deal with, concerns, anxieties, fears that we have. But notice what he says here. He says, "Therefore I say to you, do not worry about your life, what you will eat or what you will drink, nor about your body, what you will put on. Is not life more than food and the body more than clothing? But look at the birds of the air, for they neither sow or reap nor gather into barns, yet your heavenly Father feeds them. Are you not of more value than they? Which of you by worrying could add one cubit to its stature? So why do you worry about clothing? Consider the lilies of the field, how they grow. They neither toil nor spin. And yet I say to you that even Solomon in all his glory was not arrayed like one of these. Now if God so clothes the grass of the field, which today is and tomorrow is thrown into the oven, will he not much more clothe you?" And notice what he says. "O you of little faith." So everything that he's talking about revolves around having faith. "Therefore, do not worry, saying, 'What shall we eat, or what shall we drink, or what shall we wear?' For after these things the Gentiles seek. For your heavenly Father knows you need all these things." Then he says here in verse 33, the most important things for us. He says, "But seek first the kingdom of God and his righteousness, and all these things shall be added to you. Therefore, do not worry about tomorrow, for tomorrow will worry about its own things. Suffice for the day is its own trouble." So this doesn't mean, and I think we understand, brethren, that we just sit back and we don't do the things necessary to sustain our life and improve our life. Of course we do. We all work. We all work hard. We all take care of our families and do what's necessary. But Jesus is saying, have faith and confidence that God is going to take care of you when times are bad, when you are struggling with these things. If you're relying upon God, if you have your priorities straight. That's what Jesus is saying here. Because it takes genuine and trust in God when he tells us not to worry about the physical things, but rather focus on him and his righteousness and his kingdom. Brethren, God builds that faith in us when we experience the results of what he does for us, especially when we go through difficult times. Or what we do when he asks us to do it, even if it seems impossible. Even if it seems very difficult, and he asks us to step out on faith, and we do that. And when we do that, God says he's going to take care of us, and we witness that. We see that, it builds that faith for that next time. Wouldn't you agree to that? Wouldn't you agree that if you go through a difficult time, fear of an anxiety, God brings you through it? You've witnessed what God can do for you? That your faith is strengthened even greater and stronger, knowing that he's going to be there again for you? And so can we say then that faith is a fear buster? I think so. Faith is a fear buster. And so when we reach out to God in our times of difficulty and troubles, we're struggling with fears and anxieties, God will give us peace. God will give us peace of mind. Let's go to 1 Corinthians chapter 13. It's just one verse. I'm going to read 1 Corinthians 13:13. You could turn over there if you want. But Paul is addressing here the importance of love developed and displayed in a Christian. And along with that, along with love, he mentions two other things that should be working within us. One of the two I've covered. 1 Corinthians 13:13 says, "Now abide in faith, hope, and love. These three, but the greatest of these is love." Yeah, I think we know that love is the greatest attribute that we should have as a Christian. And we touched on faith. So how about hope? How about hope? Once again, there's a lot we could say about hope, like we could with faith. But once again, let me address it in the context of dealing with our concerns and fears. Go to Hebrews chapter 11, verse 1. Hebrews chapter 11, verse 1. Once again, just one verse. But I want to read it in the context of what we're talking about now. And that is of hope. And we're going to see here in this verse how hope and faith are intricately intertwined together. Hebrews 11, verse 1 says, "Now faith is the substance of things hoped for, the evidence of things not seen." What's all that mean? Let's go to Romans now, chapter 8. Romans chapter 8. Let's read verses 20 through 25. Read these verses, then we'll talk about it a little bit. Romans 8:23. "Not only that, but we also who have the first fruits of the Spirit, even we ourselves groan within ourselves, eagerly waiting for the adoption, the redemption of our body. For we were saved in this hope. But hope that is seen is not hope. For why does one still hope for what he sees? But if we hope for what we do not see, we eagerly wait for it with perseverance." So what is he, what are we saying here? What we read in Hebrews 1 and also here in Romans chapter 8. What he means is the hope that is seen, that is enjoyed, is no longer hope. It's come to fruition. A man cannot hope for that which he has in possession. So, brethren, what is it that we hope for that remains unseen? Think about some of the things that you hope for, that you think about, such as, "I hope I'm in the place of safety. I hope my family or my children will be with me. I hope that Jesus returns soon." That's a big hope. "I hope I will be in the first resurrection." It's another big hope. You know, there have been times that we in the ministry, I think the ministers that are sitting here in our congregation would agree to this, but there have been times that we have stood by the bedside of a church member that was dying who expressed concern about coming up in the first resurrection. They questioned themselves on their level of conversion. They throw out questions such as, "Have I been forgiven for everything? Did I overcome enough? Did I do enough? Am I worthy?" So they're looking for affirmation, comfort, and reassurance. And we do our best to give that to them in that conversation that we have with them. Let's go to 2 Corinthians chapter 4. I'm going to begin in verse 7. Here Paul is speaking about himself and those involved in teaching and spreading the gospel of Jesus Christ. But I think what he writes here is applicable to us as well, and possibly even more so as the return of Jesus Christ draws even nearer. 1 Corinthians 4, verse 7. He says, "But we have this treasure in earthen vessels, that the excellence of the power may be of God and not of us." He says, "We are hard pressed on every side, yet not crushed. We are perplexed, but not in despair. We're persecuted, but not forsaken. Struck down, but not destroyed." And then dropping down to verse 13. "And since we have the same spirit of faith, according to what is written, 'I believed and therefore I spoke,' we also believe and therefore speak, knowing that he who has raised up the Lord Jesus will also raise up with us up with Jesus and will present us with you." And in verse 16, "Therefore do not lose heart. Even though our outward man is perishing, yet the inward man is being renewed day by day. For our light affliction, which is but for a moment, is working for us a far more exceedingly and eternal weight of glory. While we do not look at the things which are seen, but the things which are not seen. For the things which are seen are temporary, but the things which are not seen are eternal." So those are the things that we hope for, that we all hope for and pray about. What I want to do now is I want to go through a number of verses that give us encouragement and admonition for a course of action in our lives. Let's start with Philippians 4. Philippians 4 and verse 4. So I'm going to burn through a number of verses here. But I think these are important for us to think about and to consider in the context of this message today. Philippians 4 and verse 4. It says, "Rejoice in the Lord always. Again, I say rejoice. Let your gentleness be known to men. The Lord is at hand." So Paul believed that Jesus Christ's return was close. And he says, "Be anxious for nothing. Be anxious for nothing. But in everything, by prayer and supplication, with thanksgiving, let your requests be known to God. And the peace of God, which surpasses all understanding, will guard your hearts and minds through Jesus Christ." So there it is, brethren. The peace of God, from God to you. Dropping down to verse 10. "But I rejoice in the Lord greatly that now at least your care for me has flourished again, though you surely did care, but you lacked opportunity. Not that I speak in regard to need, for I've learned in whatever state I am to be content. I know now how to be abased. I know how to abound. Everything and in all things I have learned both to be full and to be hungry, both to abound and suffer need." And Paul says here in verse 13, "I can do all things through Christ who strengthened me." So he knew where to go. He knew what his source was for his strength, and to deal with what he had to deal with. All right, my next set is over in 1 Peter chapter 5. 1 Peter chapter 5, I'm going to begin in verse 6. I'll read verses 6 through 11. 1 Peter 5:6. Therefore, humble yourselves under the mighty hand of God, that he may exalt you in due time, casting all your care upon him, for he cares for you. Be sober, be vigilant, because your adversary, the devil, walks about like a roaring lion, seeking whom he may devour. Resist him, steadfast in the faith, knowing that the time of sufferings are experienced by your brotherhood in the world. But may the God of all grace, who called us to his eternal glory by Jesus Christ, after you have suffered a while, perfect, establish, strengthen, and settle you. To him be the glory and dominion forever and ever. Amen. All right, one more. Just one more, John 14, verse 27. John 14, verse 27, just one verse. Once again here, Jesus talks about the peace we receive from him when we're troubled and fearful. John 14, verse 27. Peace I live with you, my peace I give you, not as the world gives you do I give to you. And he says, let not your heart be troubled, neither let it be afraid. So, brethren, I could go through a number of verses that provide comfort and reassurance when dealing with anxieties and fears that we face in this physical life. Some of the fears I mentioned in the beginning of this message were fears that we most often, we just accept and we deal with them. Others that become phobias might take greater effort and action on our part to deal with and overcome. Fears of the future, such as our eternal life and entrance to God's kingdom, what's going to happen before Christ's return, those fears can be overcome. And once again, I repeat, first of all, by a deep, sincere, and honest relationship with God the Father. And then in addition, faith in the promises of God, which are those things which we hope for. So, brethren, there truly is no need to be fearful. There's no need for your fears and worries to control your life. I know at times it's easy to say that and harder to do. I get that. But let's strive not to be troubled. Don't be overly anxious. Cast your cares and concerns on your Heavenly Father, who loves you, cares for you, and who will give you peace. Brethren, all of our hopes someday will be a reality. Have faith that all things are possible with God. Enjoy the rest of your Sabbath.